This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Alison Milden.
And I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So welcome back, Alison. We've enjoyed hearing about your overseas experiences that you have had as you were developing and growing in this world. And you were off to Gambia last week.
Well, yes, my two friends, flatmates, were going off in Petal, which was a little car with the wooden back to it. And it had ball tyres and no brakes, but you didn't worry about things like that. And they were going off, and instead of going with them, I had decided that I'd go down to the Gambia in West Africa, because I'd had a friend in New Zealand from that country, and this was an opportunity to do something
absolutely
very different. So on this score, I was incredibly naive. I thought that Dakar in Senegal was an international airport.
Right.
No, it had grass growing down the middle of the...
Yes. So there's your first cultural...
There was no place to change money. There was no place to book a hotel. I had also been told, in Senegal, you get a bus, and that will take you down to the Gambia, the river, then you cross on the ferry, and you're there. Very naive. Because I arrived, there was a chap with a gun at the customs and immigration. We'd been given some forms to fill in, and the form said address. Well, I didn't have one, did I?
Why were there officers there, customs with guns? Was there a world international reason?
No,
or was it?
It was just then.
Right. And you're
so
here on your own.
Speaking English, not French, being spoken to in French, and having it pointed out to me that I must give an address.
Wow.
Or I will not be admitted.
Quite frightening.
So there was a moment of apprehension when a man, a couple of spaces behind me, spoke to me in English, although he was obviously French. He said, write this. So I did, and they
took you through.
But there's nowhere to book a hotel. There's nothing that can help me.
What did he tell you to write? Was it another?
An address.
Okay.
An address. So this man, you have to just make snap judgments.
You do.
Said he was with, he was a doctor with, is it Medicine des Frontières or something?
Yeah.
I should learn that.
So he sounded a good professional man.
He could have been telling me a story.
Yes.
He said, where was I going? I said, now I have no idea. I have nowhere to go to. It's night now. It's dark. He said, my friend from the university is coming to pick me up. He said, but then we have to go back to the university to have some discussion. If you are happy to do it, come with us and we'll make sure you're okay. Well, I could have been going off into the white slave trade.
Yes, you could have. You could
anybody,
have.
You know, but you have to
trust your gut.
Trust your gut. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened. They found me a place to stay. I had no money because there was no money exchange. Mm. They trusted me on that. They paid, came in the morning. They paid for the hotel until they could take me to a place I could change money in bank. And then they took me to catch the bus. The bus is a huge, bigger than football field of bare dirt with every kind of auto junk. I thought there'd be something like a Greyhound bus.
Yeah.
No, they were not buses, and I know them.
Oh, and you're on your own. Oh.
So they negotiated me onto a vehicle in which nobody spoke English, but I was obviously seen as a bit of a...
You know, what's she doing here on her own?
Unique person. And we did our best to communicate. And then we got to the border and they all got off.
Were you frightened with all this, or were you just, were you going with the flow, or?
At that point, because the driver of the vehicle would not take on any new passengers. Obviously, what he was saying is, I'm taking this woman, me, so in that moment, do I throw myself at the mercy of the border guards? Do I go with this man?
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yes. What a dilemma. What did you do?
I went with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove through godforsaken dust and empty space, through villages where the men would be sitting under a tree, obviously fixing the world.
Talking.
While, I suppose, women were out getting the water, buying the firewood, doing the cooking.
Cooking the tea,
I don't know, I'm looking after the kids.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get to the river. He's done his duty, his deed, as he saw it.
Yes.
He'd done it well.
Yeah.
And I had been quite safe.
Yes.
He was perhaps protecting me.
Yes, yes.
So I now arrive in Banjul, the capital. It was not called Banjul then. It was... English name. And open drains. People lived in like old families together.
Yes, yes.
Now, this person I've gone to has had an education at Otago University in New Zealand, behaved in a very European way, partied, drank, ate pork, etc.
Yes.
I don't think I even realised he would have been Muslim.
Yeah.
That's how... And you come into the society and it is completely different.
A village?
No, the capital.
Okay. So what was that like? Was that like Western capitals? Or?
No, not the central part, which was, as I said, open drains still.
Okay.
People lived in compounds.
Right, right.
And everything happened within the compound. But further out, and members of the family were living in European-type houses.
Right, right.
But we were in a compound.
Right.
So an aunt, for example, lived across the road.
Right.
In the Gambia, I'm a Tubab, which means I'm white. The children touch your hair.
Yes.
They're just so excited.
Yes.
In their impeccable white shirts and school uniforms.
Yes, yes.
All.
Yes.
And their hair done in lovely braids. And but the house I'm in is a, or the compound is the wife of the brother of my friend.
Right.
He's a British trained multi degreed person.
Mm.
But they can have more than one wife.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes.
And that's what he'd done. So he'd essentially abandoned this wife, sister-in-law.
Right.
And gone off with his new wife.
Other one.
Now, that's not the customary way. He is still meant to ensure.
Yeah.
But things were a bit tough.
Mm.
So food was tough.
Mm.
Why? The Swedish tourism industry.
Oh, okay.
So right at that time was the beginning of the Swedish influx into the wonderful Gambia.
Oh, okay.
White sand, blue sea.
Right.
And gorgeous
right.
Men.
Right. Oh, gosh.
And so the hotels were taking all the best food.
Oh, yes.
And
okay.
The markets got what's left and the prices went up. So that was a little study in economics
that
I learned.
Amidst all the survival journey, yes.
I also learned, had we really done a service to take people from countries with a very different way of life, put them through our universities and send them back, you had to be really tough to survive that.
Yes.
My Zambian friend was quite different.
Mm.
He had an attitude, did very well, went into a very good job. This was a Muslim country.
No, okay.
You come back, you're going to get a good job, you're going to earn money, and all of that should be shared with us.
Yes, yes, yeah. Mm.
So there was this constant
demand
on this person. So while I'm there is a divorce. So the couple that are no longer living together, there's a decision made, obviously, to divorce her.
Mm.
I'm visiting a friend, another friend, who I'd known from London, who was home visiting his family. His sister had come home from school, from work, and said, Abdullahi is divorcing Rohi. So I'm told you better get home quickly.
Get home as in?
Well, back to where I'm staying.
Okay.
Where Rohi lives with the children.
Right, right.
She has no idea. I scurry back. She's just normal.
She's the one that's being divorced.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Nothing's happening. And then the phone rings. So we've been sitting talking. The phone rings. She speaks. She stands up. And she starts taking things off the wall. And when she gets to me, she says, Abdullahi has just divorced me. He must have, on the phone, just said,
I'm divorcing you.
I divorced her three times and that was it.
And so what happens to her?
Well, it was obviously the word got round. Suddenly there was mayhem, bedlam. People pouring into the house, packing up all the house. I'm sitting there.
His things or her things?
Everything. There's a truck downstairs.
Oh, my gosh.
Everything's going downstairs. I've got one of the children sitting on my knee, and I'm sitting there thinking,
what about my
things? What do I do?
Was she upset?
There was just so much noise.
Yes, and so much going on.
Anyway, by about 10 o'clock that night, it seemed like it was over. My friend was nowhere to be seen. I had no idea what was happening. What would I do? And then there's another kerfuffle, and suddenly everything starts
coming
back.
Oh, nice.
I don't know, some negotiation somewhere must have taken place, and the decision was that this is not going to happen at this moment. So, basically, I had gone there for an indefinite time.
Right.
Because I didn't have a definite time. But to extend my visa, I had to go to the police.
Right.
Now, in the meantime, the aunt, these people were high up in government.
Right,
and stuff,
right.
And the aunt over the road had decided that I was an evil spirit.
Oh, gosh.
That in the night flew around as a pig. I was a pink pig.
No.
That flew around doing bad things. And da-da-da-da.
That's actually quite frightening, though, if a village turns against you and suggests...
I don't think I ever felt endangered.
Oh, that's good.
No. Yeah. But because of the problems over the marriage between Rohi and Abdullah, she was into, like many of them were at that time, I don't know, into juju men.
Oh, okay.
So we'd go out to a village, and we'd have cowrie shells would be thrown, amulets would be given, the children would have amulets, things would get buried at the gateway.
Right.
All of that stuff happening. And nasty-looking bottles would be behind the legs of the chairs.
Right.
And so there's this really curious combination of custom.
What were you thinking? What were you thinking in that?
Well, I was a bit wondering what was what.
Yeah.
My visa came up to be extended. I had to go to the police to do that.
Right.
And I was told to leave.
Okay.
So, whatever, for whatever reason.
Then you left.
I was basically sent from the country.
Yes. Were you sorry to leave the country, or were you pleased to leave the country, or?
I was very upset.
Mm.
I was very upset because of the dreadful messiness and unfinished business.
Yes.
Very upset.
Yeah. And did you ever see your friend again? Like, he and his wife, right, that divorced?
No, that was the friend's brother.
Oh, the friend's brother. Okay.
Did
she ever see her husband, even though that the gear came back?
Gone. Yeah. We used to write a little bit.
Yeah.
She remarried. I think she married the chief of police, the guy who sent me away. And I think she ended up in the UK.
Okay.
Yeah.
Different culture, though, isn't it? And different experiences.
Yes.
But you were on your own going through all that. That's huge. Huge. So where did you go from there?
Well, I got on a plane
and
flew to Paris, met a lovely woman next to me on the plane.
Right.
And her husband, they were English, and he worked in the mines in Sierra Leone.
Right.
And she'd been out to see him.
Mm. Mm.
So she took me under her wing a little bit to comfort me and help me a bit.
Yeah.
And then
isn't it lovely how in absolutely crucial moments there's just somebody there, isn't there, to just help you?
Yes.
You know, isn't that? That was such a blessing, really, in many ways, wasn't it? That
yes.
So
I arrived back in London, and my friends were still doing their touring thing.
Right.
and another friend from New Zealand was arriving.
Right.
On the Italian ship.
Oh, right.
In Italy.
Right.
So I decided I would go down to Italy.
Right.
Meet her. Then we'd both travel up and meet
right.
the other two
yeah.
in Davos, Switzerland.
Right.
Where they had been
right.
working in a hotel.
Right, right.
Yes. So that's what happened.
So yes. friendship and you kept together.
Yes.
Wow. So are there any countries where you've left your heart as in that you thought, wow, what a neat country that really spoke to me? Or was it all each country had its own special experiences for you?
Despite the difficulties, which I suppose I brought on myself, because my determination was, what is the point of travelling and then living, breathing, partying with the people that you live, breathed and partied with at home?
Yes, yes.
My big thing was, don't do that. So for me, and that brought probably quite a bit of difficulties sometimes and issues and emotional upset. But everywhere was significant. And boy, I missed that. I did not miss New Zealand food, though I love a good roast, etc., etc. But the Gambian food, the taste of the spices, I missed that.
Today, do you cook Gambian food?
No. I tried once in London. Years and years later.
Right.
Was the first thing that the man who became my husband ate.
Right.
And from then on, he refused to allow me to cook, there we go.
Right. So how long did you travel for? Were you overseas for quite some time? Or?
Yeah, so that stint was 3 years. And I left heartbroken. Thinking, though, I should come home. Somehow I felt that, can you leave your parents like this? Can you not seem to want to be?
Heartbroken because you were leaving someone?
Yes.
Right.
Everything.
Right. And
everything.
That came to a natural end that you came home? Or?
No, I just made that decision. And
so
flew in over Wellington and just burst into tears. It just, and my parents were there waiting, looking so, and I just felt sick.
Looking so that they were excited to see you?
They were, you know, obviously. Ellie's come home.
Yes, yes. Been away 3 years.
That's how I should feel. But I just was. So that, I suppose, entered the next phase of my life of what I came to learn was the chronic depression.
Oh, no.
Just for a time. I just did not want to be here.
And did you come straight back to the Manawatu or did you, to Kairanga?
I went home, obviously. And just fell into this deep misery. Went and looked for a job and got a fabulous job offer, which I accepted. And then I had completely lost all my confidence. So there I had been 3 years living overseas, and I came home.
Trekking around Europe and...
It was like a plug pulled from the bottom of my stomach. And so what did I do? I accepted this job, and on the same day this other option came, and it was the safe one.
What did you do? The safe one or the...
I took the safe one. Silly me.
Message in that, isn't there?
Yes. The one I'd accepted I would have gone to VAC part-time and done law, and it was patent attorney's office. And instead I went and worked at Vic Library, University of Victoria.
Both in...
Wellington.
Both in Victoria.
Yeah. But good came of it.
Yeah.
On my first day, I met this lovely person who became my sister-in-law.
Oh.
And that wouldn't have happened.
Right.
So...
Well, that's good. That's good from a move. Yeah. We'll hear more about your life next week.
I think the important thing is don't have regrets that you agonise over.
Right.
There are things you wish you might have done or could have done or especially said, but not to beat yourself up mourning that you hadn't.
Yes, done the things. Yeah, absolutely.
Wishing you hadn't.
This is part 4 of 5. Tune in next week for part 5.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.